Well, good evening. I hope you're all doing well this evening. We're going to be continuing our series of lessons in the book of Exodus. We're in chapter 19 right now. I marked chapter 9 in my Bible, but we're in chapter 19. But I've enjoyed our time in the book of Exodus that we've been looking at on Sunday night, and we've hit this amazing, powerful moment in the book. It's this staggering thing that's about to happen to the people of Israel. And there's kind of a lot to it, so I want us to kind of just get ready to jump into it. The people have been rescued from Egyptian slavery, as we've already seen. God's brought them to this mountain in the wilderness. Everything's been leading up to them finally getting to Sinai. And God is entering into a new covenant with them. He's adding on to this Abrahamic covenant, giving a lot of new ideas and stipulations to it. We saw that in chapter 19 last week in verses 4 through 6. They're supposed to obey the voice of the Lord and keep his covenant, and then they'll be his treasured possession, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Beautiful ideas here that God is promising. Moses reports this news to the people, and their people respond and very boldly say, everything, all this stuff God's asked, we're going to do it. We will do it. We're going to do exactly what God asked us to do. And with this idea of covenant declared, the people are going to meet with God. You know, they made this deal, this agreement, this arrangement, and now they're going to seal it by meeting together. You know, it's almost like they're shaking on it. You know, they're going to make it official. So the people are going to get to know God in this very special way. Like, think about this for a moment. It's kind of nuts. In Exodus 19:11, God says he's going to come down. In verse 17, we'll see that the people are gathered to meet God. And what we're reading in Exodus 19, what we're going to be looking at, is the preparation of the people. You know, what do you got to do before you're going to meet God? You know, think about like a job interview or something where you're really careful about how you're going in there and what's going to happen and how you want to present yourself. And like, that's a stressful environment, but I can't really think of a more stressful environment than, okay, got to have a physical meeting with God. Like, how do I prepare for that? And I'm sure that's on the people's mind as they're getting into this. But if you'll notice, we'll go ahead and read it. In verse 9 of Exodus 19, we see a reason. Why is God coming down to meet them? He says in verse 9 of Exodus 19, the Lord said to Moses, behold, I'm coming to you in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you, and may also believe you forever. The Lord's coming down in this way, so that the people will hear God speak with Moses, and they will believe in Moses forever. And the goal of these events, as the people come to meet God, is that the people will trust, that they will believe, and that they will listen to Moses as God's voice to them from this point onward. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at what God is doing, what is required of the people to meet God, and what these things mean for us as Christians under Christ's covenant so long after this event. So let's begin reading in Exodus 19. We're going to start in about verse 10. And go down to verse 15. It says, the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments and be ready for the third day. On the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And you shall set limits for the people all around, saying, take care not to go up into the mountain or to touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch it, but he shall be stoned or shot. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain. And so Moses went down from the mountain to the people and consecrated the people. And they washed their garments, and he said to the people, be ready for the third day. Do not go near a woman. So the people are to be ready for the Lord's coming. They gotta become consecrated. Now, consecration in the scriptures, like, what does that word mean? That's a weird word we don't use every day. It means to be dedicated or set apart. You know, we talk about that word holy. To be holy is to be set apart. Well, consecrated is a verb, and it means, like, to become holy, to be this set apart. It's the process you go through to get from not being holy to being holy. The people need to be consecrated, to be cleaned, essentially. The people need to separate themselves. And we're going to see this idea a lot in the Old Testament, this idea of a ritual purity, this idea of becoming holy as God would want you to be, making them ready for the presence of God. Their clothes need to be washed. They need to put some boundaries around this mountain. Don't go near the presence of God. No one was to go up the mountain or to touch the mountain. They were to abstain from any kind of physical relationships with each other. They were preparing for God's arrival, and they were supposed to be focusing on God, not on the flesh. And these are the preparations the people are supposed to make. And finally, when they hear the trumpet blast on that third day, they got to approach the mountain to meet God. The message is simple but extremely important in this whole thing. God gives really specific instructions. And I think one of the things we're supposed to take from this is, if you're going to meet God, it's not just simple. You don't just walk up. You don't just walk up and meet God. You can't meet God in your current condition. You need to be made holy if you're going to stand in the presence of God. You know, God can't be around sin or many of the things that go along with sin. And so if they're going to be in his presence, they've got to do something first. Isaiah reflects on this truth as he sees a vision of the presence of God in the book of Isaiah. He recognizes that he is undone. He is in danger. He don't know how he can be in God's presence because he is unclean. And he sees the holiness of the Lord. And the New Testament talks about this same idea in the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verse 14. Strive for peace with everyone, it says, and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. One of the clear ideas you're going to see through Scripture is that to be in God's presence, you've got to be holy. And this is the first time Israel really encounters this issue, this problem. This is why the Scriptures are constantly declaring that we got to be ready to meet God, because if God is coming, you're not ready like you are. You need to make some changes. It's not a casual affair. You need to be consecrated to meet him. And if you're not consecrated, you won't be allowed in his presence. You'll be destroyed. God can't be in the presence of unholiness. I've heard the holiness of God referred to kind of like the sun. God is too good and too pure, and if you are impure and you are in his presence, that's going to put you in danger. It's just not something you could stand in. So we see the people making these preparations, and then we see what happens in verses 16 through 20. It says, on the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain and the very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people of the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire, and the smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln. The whole mountain trembled greatly, and the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Moses spoke, and God answered him in the thunder. Such a beautiful, like, powerful image there. Exodus 19:19. Moses spoke and God answered him in the thunder. Like, it's a very just evocative image. And the Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. So on the morning of this third day, there's these thunders and lightnings, there's this thick cloud on the mountain, this very loud trumpet blast, all the people tremble. Moses gets brought up into the mountain, and I just want you to visualize what this whole thing would be like. Just like picture it in your mind. Imagine this crazy, frightening storm. There's thunder and lightning, there's thick cloud on the mountain, you know. I can't imagine. I've been up on some pretty high places. I've never been on a mountain that was so high that you couldn't see the top of it because of thick cloud. But I can just imagine, you know, just being so thick you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And not only is there this terrifying storm up on this mountain, but there's this loud trumpet blast so that all the people of the camp are trembling. And when they hear this trumpet blast, they're supposed to walk forward towards all this terrifying, crazy storm that's come upon this mountain to meet God. And this is what happens in verse 17. In fear and trembling, they approach the mountain, and they do what they're supposed to. They take their stand. And the closer they come to the mountain, the more clearly they kind of see this vast difference between who they are and who God is, how big God is, how powerful God is, the majesty of Him. I can't imagine what that must have felt like. I just imagine this feeling of, oh, I don't belong here. I am not fit to meet something like this. I can't stand against this. This is too much for a man. There's nothing casual about the arrival of God. But that's not all that's happening. The mountain was smoking because when God came down, He descended on it in fire, and smoke is coming off the mountains like a burning furnace, we see in verse 18, and the whole mountain is trembling along with the people. Even the world itself is trembling in the presence of God as he comes down. The trumpet is blaring, the mountain is smoking and shaking, and there's earthquakes, and the thunder is clapping, and the lightning is striking all around, and Moses spoke, and God answered Moses in the thunder. You know, you approach the mountain at the sound of this trumpet blast that you don't know where it's coming from, and your leader gets up and says something, and from the midst of this crazy storm, you just hear God's voice answer back. And God tells Moses, come up. And you know, I'm going to be honest, it's almost kind of understandable that Israel's like, well, surely Moses has perished just a little while after this. Ain't nobody that could survive being up on that mountain with God. It's too much. And then you'd worship a golden calf right by that. And that seems a little bold. But anyway, let's continue on a little bit further. And look at verses 21 through 25. They're really interesting to me. It says, and the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people. You know, God has just called Moses up onto this mountain. What's the first thing God says? All right, go back down there and talk to them. Before we have our conversation, go back down there and talk to them. Go down and warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord to look, and many of them perish. Also, let the priests who come near to the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. And Moses said to the Lord, the people can't come up to Mount Sinai, for you yourself warned us, saying, set limits around the mountain and consecrate it. And the Lord said to him, go down and come up bringing Aaron with you. But don't let the priest and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and told them. Moses goes up the mountain. And God tells Moses to go back down and to warn the people. You know, the priests, if they want to come near, they've got to be consecrated. The people, they just can't. They cannot come up the mountain. God wants to make sure that His presence doesn't kill any of these people, and they are just not holy enough to be in His presence. He doesn't want them to die, but if they approach, that's what's going to happen. So warn them again. And I love that Moses is, he almost kind of responds like, well, God, we know, don't come on the mountain. You told us, don't come up on the mountain. And God's like, yeah, but go down and tell them again. Make sure they hear you. Make sure they realize, because this is life or death, and I know they're not going to listen. Go back down and tell them. They can't come up. God says, go down, make sure no one crosses the boundary. Tell them again, because He knows that humans are going to break His law. Warn them to keep their distance, because He knows how imperfect we are. The holiness of God is being expressed to the people again. And so Moses goes down to the people. He tells them, and we read all this, and we wonder, okay, what does this whole weird mountain storm holy meeting with God have to do with us? As Christians today, why do we have this? And this has been a big part of our goal going through Exodus, is to look at this book and to try to learn from it, to see like what we can learn from it as Christians, to see where Christ fits into the picture of what's going on in Exodus. And I think Exodus 19 is a place where Christ kind of looms large. There's a lot here in Exodus 19 that the Bible's going to kind of play on later when we see Jesus that helps us to better understand some of the things that happened with Him. We noted many times throughout Exodus seeing Moses acting as the mediator between God and the people. And this is a role that Jesus obviously comes and fulfills in a more perfect way. You know, the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy 2, verses 5 and 6, declares that there's one God and there's one real mediator between God and man. One perfect Moses, if you will. It's Jesus Christ, who gave himself as a ransom for all. But there's another phrase that's used here in Exodus that is really interesting in how it links back to Jesus. And you may notice this in verse 16. On the morning of the third day. Now, here's a fun like biblical thing we miss sometimes. This is a major image in the Bible, this three-day wait, and then something happens. This event of God coming down and meeting his people happens on the morning of the third day, but the third day is significant all throughout the Bible. The third day is a day often when God's glory is revealed, and a day often when the hand of God is revealed. For example, King Hezekiah is told that his illness is going to kill him, and he will not recover. And he prays to the Lord, and what does Isaiah tell him? Isaiah tells him that God heard his prayer, and he's going to be healed. And on the third day, go up to the house of the Lord. Further, the book of Esther. It's on the third day when Esther begins her actions to rescue the Jews from the decree of destruction. In Esther chapter 5, verse 1. Hosea says this in Hosea chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, regarding the restoration of Israel. He says, "Come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn us, and he may heal us. He has struck us down, but he will bind us up. And after 2 days, he will receive us, and on the third day, he'll raise us up, that we may live before him." This is a big biblical image. On the third day, deliverance comes. On the third day is when the day of the glory of God will be displayed. And so on the third day, God comes down on the mountain and displays his glory before the people, so much that they tremble. It's on the morning of the third day, just several thousand years later, a couple thousand years later, where we see the greatest display of God's glory occurring when Jesus himself is raised on that third day. The third day is this image of rescue. It's this image God often used for when he saves us or when he comes to us in our time of need. And we see the same image, of course, in Jesus, who rises on the third day to rescue us from sin, just like these people have been rescued from slavery. Now, recall the purpose of this third day event in Exodus. God reveals that why he's coming at all. Why he's coming on the third day. Why he wants everybody to see him. He says, "I'm coming," and he says in verse 9, "so that the people will hear when I speak to you, and they will believe you forever," God tells Moses. This whole event, the whole reason God's doing all this, was to cause the people to listen to Moses as he's giving God's word to them. Moses is God's authorized representative, declaring the very words of God. Moses was never to be ignored. It's really important you pay attention to what he has to say, because he's God's voice here. And this is what God does on the third day with the resurrection of Jesus in much the same way. That resurrection shows the world that we are to believe Jesus and listen to him forever. As Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 declare, God's spoken now. You know, in the past he spoke through the prophets, but today he's spoken through his Son. And we are to listen to him. The connection's made even stronger in the New Testament because Jesus goes up on a mountain where he is transfigured in Matthew chapter 17, verse 1 starting. He sees Moses and Elijah. And this is what happens in verse 5. It says, "He was still speaking when behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, 'This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him.'" It's just like what happens with Moses. Moses is up on a mountain and God speaks to Moses from the cloud, from the thunder. And here in the Transfiguration, we see the same image. God speaks to Jesus from this cloud, from this mist. And the idea is the same in both. Listen to what my representative has to say. You know, first it's Moses, but this is God himself in the flesh. You know, the mountain and the cloud overshadows them in Matthew. And this is really the whole point of this transfiguration. Jesus later is trying to show people that they need to listen to him, just as the people were to listen to Moses in Exodus. But the connection to the resurrection of Jesus and the third day is made even stronger in the New Testament because Paul talks about this in Acts chapter 13. He's got this whole sermon. And we'll read part of it from Acts 13. He says, "But God raised him from the dead, And for many days he appeared to those who had come up with him from Galilee to Jerusalem, who are now his witnesses to the people. We bring you the good news that God promised to the fathers. This he has fulfilled to us, their children, by raising Jesus. Also, it's written in the second Psalm, "You are my son, and today I have begotten you." As for the fact that he was raised from the dead, no more to return to corruption, he's spoken in this way, "I'll give you the holy and sure blessings of David." He also says in another Psalm, "You will not let your Holy One see corruption." For David, after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, fell asleep and was laid with his fathers and saw corruption. But he whom God raised up did not see it. Let it be known to you, therefore, brothers, that through this man forgiveness of sins is proclaimed to you. And by him everyone who believes is freed from everything for which he could not be freed by the law of Moses. You know, it's just funny. This perfect law that the Israelites have been following comes at the end of this 3-day period in which God comes down. And they finally begin to get the message. And God uses this same idea with his son, who after 3 days proves who he is and gives you a message that's greater than anything you saw in the book of Exodus. The resurrection is the proof put forward that Jesus is God's son, according to Paul here in Acts 13. And you see that the point of this is that everyone who believes in him is going to be freed from sins and freed from the law. It's that same language from Exodus. What happens in Exodus? The people are freed. They're freed from slavery. They're freed from many of the sins they've been struggling with. They have this avenue to finally get to God after he reveals his glory on the third day. And Jesus is kind of this mirror of it. And so this scene in Exodus, it means a lot for us. The writer of Hebrews assumes knowledge of this scene in Exodus when he teaches Christians what we're supposed to do. And we'll read some of Hebrews starting in about verse 18 of chapter 12. But before we read verse 18, notice that the context is the need for holiness, without which no one can see the Lord. That's what he's talking about in Hebrews 12. He says you need to be holy to see God. Same idea we see here in Exodus. The writer uses Esau as an example of the need not to be defiled or immoral or unholy in verses 15 through 17. And the expectation of this consecration, of being made holy, is declared just as God declared the need for consecration, for becoming holy in Exodus 19. Let's read Hebrews chapter 12, verses 18 through 29. And he really ties a lot of this imagery, this language together. He says, "For you've not come to what may be touched." Isn't that interesting? What does he say in Exodus? You can't touch the mountain where God is. "You hadn't come to what may be touched, a blazing fire and darkness and gloom and a tempest." Same imagery from Exodus 19. "The sound of a trumpet and the voice whose words made the hearers beg no further messages be spoken to them," which we'll get to in Exodus. "For they could not endure the order that was given. If even a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned. Indeed, so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, 'I tremble with fear.' But you've come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels in festal gathering, to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For if they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, much less will we escape when we reject him who warns from heaven. At that time, his voice shook the earth. But now he's promised, 'Yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens.'" This phrase, "yet once more," indicates the removal of things that are shaken, things that have been made, in order that things that cannot be shaken may remain. "Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that can't be shaken. Let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire." The writer of Hebrews is just picking up on everything that we saw in Exodus 19. He says, you've not come to a physical mountain to meet God like they did. You didn't come to Mount Sinai, which was a terrifying sight that terrified even Moses, who said, I tremble with fear. God coming down on that mountain made everyone there tremble in this fear. This is how intense the holiness of God is. But the writer wants to make sure we understand that we've not come to that mountain. But that doesn't mean we haven't come to God. We haven't come into his presence. We have, in fact, come to a mountain. We've come to one that's not physical like Sinai. We've come to the spiritual mountain called Zion. That's the language he uses, which was spoken about by the prophets. We've come to a mountain greater of greater significance. And at this mountain, you come to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, the beautiful imagery here, the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, to sprinkled blood, which cleanses. This image of the new covenant, the writer of Hebrews says, God was intense with his holiness at Sinai, but you haven't come to Sinai, so now you don't have to worry or fear in that same way. Now, we can approach God. The writer continues that if they didn't escape when God warned them on earth, just as he did at Sinai, how much less will we escape if we reject Jesus who speaks from heaven? We've received this kingdom that can't be shaken as the church, this opportunity that is impossible to destroy or get rid of if we'll accept it. And so now we must worship without trembling, but with this respect, with this awe, because our God is a consuming fire. Notice the point is, he's not trying to say that the holiness of God isn't still powerful and amazing, but now it's something we can approach. You know, I think until we understand who God is, we see this image of his great power and holiness in Exodus. It's really hard for us to appreciate what we have as Christians. I once heard somebody say it, until you've trembled at the mountain, you'll never understand God's mercy at Golgotha. And this is why Exodus matters. It's because the only reason that today I can just sit down, I can pray to God, I can be in God's presence every time we come together, and we have this wonderful relationship with him where we have this better covenant. The only reason I don't have to spend 3 days cleansing myself and follow all these rules and laws and be so careful about the holiness of God because I'm an unholy wretch is because Jesus died to give me a way to approach a God that powerful, that holy, that wonderful. Jesus died so that I don't have to be afraid to go up the mountain and see my Father. And I just think that's beautiful. We've come to Zion and the holiness of God. It's the same as it was then. God hasn't changed. But we have a different opportunity because of his Son. And this means that we don't approach God, you know, just in any fashion we like. We still have to take the right way. As Jesus said this morning in John, this idea that he is the shepherd. There's really only one method to get to him. But now we know that when we approach, we can go right to the Father. We have no fear. We have no trembling. There is no anxiety about it. The coming of God means we need to be holy in who we are. But thanks to Jesus, we can do that. We've got somebody that we can listen to that can guide us on the way we need to go. And I think to me that's just what stands out about Exodus 19. It sits out as this moment of gratitude in my mind. It reminds me of what Jesus has done for me, of how times have changed, and how thanks to him, God and man can be together in the way that we were really supposed to be in the first place. You know, tonight, I don't know what your struggle is. I don't know what difficulty you're going through, but I do know that you need God. You need that mountain. You need to approach Him. And tonight, if you need prayer, if you're struggling to do that, we want to help you. If there's any need that you have, we'll do what we can for you as we stand and as we sing.